Muir goes into the sea and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Barks.
A man and woman from Aberdeen had been in a shipwreck and were floating hopelessly in the ocean on a small raft. Their supplies were gone and they had no water. "Never mind," said the woman, "it'll be all right. Things could be worse." "Aye," said her husband, "we might have bought return tickets."
"Excuse me, excuse me.
Yes.
Are you the lifeguard who saved my son from drowning?"
"Yes, I am."
"Where's his cap?"
Did you hear about the poor little bloater who went deaf?
Poor little bloater who went deaf? No, yeah. No.
All his friends clubbed together and bought him a herring aid.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, Stuart.
Shall I bring your lunch up on deck, sir?
No, save time, just throw it overboard. Did you hear about the Irishman who wanted to be buried at sea?
No.
4 men were drowned trying to dig his grave.
"Captain, there's a tramp steamer signalling us."
"What do they want?"
"They want 10p for a cup of tea."
"What lies at the bottom of the sea and shakes?"
"I don't know." "What does lie at the bottom of the sea and shakes?"
"A nervous wreck." "What fish swims on its side and terrorizes other fish?"
"I don't know. What fish does swim on its side and terrorize other fish?"
"Jack the Kipper." "Seamus, can you tell me what that strange thing over there on the harbour wall is?"
"I can, that Pat, I can. It's a lobster pot."
"Oh, no. No, no, it can't be. No, no.
That's what it is, Pat. That's what it is. You can take my word for it."
"You'd never get a lobster to sit on that."
"What must it be like to see the sea for the first time? Before the war, a London newspaper reported that an old lady in her 70s had never seen the sea, and she wanted to see it before she died. So her family clubbed together and took her on a day trip to Southend. She sat in her deck chair contemplating the water for 10 minutes and then said...
Is that all it does?
Now, just in case any of you are also unfamiliar with the sea, perhaps we should hear a bit of Ogden Nash's A Beginner's Guide to the Ocean.
"Let us now consider the ocean. It is always in motion. It is generally understood to be the source of much of our rain, and 10,000 fleets are said to have swept over it in vain. When the poet requested it to break, break, break on its cold grey rocks, it obligingly broke, broke, broke. Which, as the poet was Alfred Lord Tennyson, didn't surprise him at all, but if it had been me, I would probably have had a stroke."
It's part of the sea's fascination that makes people want to go off and book up holiday cruises.
"So I went to this travel agency. What's this place in Mile End Road? Never again. I wouldn't go there. Mile End Road. And there was this woman. I went in, there was this woman sat there behind the counter. Oh, poor soul, she was fat. Oh, she was fat. Oh, she was, oh, huge. I mean, every time she breathed, everything quivered, you know. You know, and... So I said, excuse me, I said, could I see your brochures? So she said, I beg your pardon? I said, your brochures, your tours. She said, you're not touring over my brochures. I thought we'd got a right one here for the start. I said, look, I'm on a holiday, I'm come for a holiday, a nice cheap holiday. She said, oh, she said, well, have you tried potholing? So I said, well, I thought it sounds vulgar enough for me. So I thought, no, the weather. No, I don't think it's me. Well, she said, why not try a boat on the Broads? I thought, I'd rather try some Broads on a boat. Anyway, no, I'm sorry, no, that's neither here nor there. So anyway, she said, here, she said, would you care for a cruise? She said, I've got a good cruise. Well, she said, I haven't got a good cruise. But she said, I know the captain of a trawler, the skipper of a trawler. And she said, I know him, he's a very good friend of mine. You see, I thought, hello, hello, yes. I thought myself, you know, I thought myself, hello, there's one here knows the way round the bay. And not home in time for tea either. But so anyway, she said, look, I can do you a nice 10 guinea cruise. So I thought, that's cheap, see? So I said, right.
That's me, that's it. You're on. So I went in this trawler, sharing a cabin with half a ton of coke. And there I was, yes. 10 guineas, I thought it's worth it for 10 guineas. No! This is it. Where was our first port of call? May I ask? Where was our first port of call? Tokyo. Tokyo! I can tell you it wasn't Rotherhithe, so we stepped ashore. I thought it's not Rotherhithe for a start. That's a lovely place, Tokyo. It's like a sort of inscrutable Tunbridge Wells. And I've no digs. No digs, you see. So I went to this rickshaw driver. So he took me to this tea house. It was called the Tea House of the Seven Dragons. And this woman opened the door. She was one of them, obviously. Sloppy cat. It was the middle of the afternoon. There she was, dressed in this dressing gown and slippers, halfway down the afternoon. I said, I'm sorry, Mrs. I said, if I've woken you up from your kip. Oh, she said, no. Oh, she said, no, this is traditional dress. This is kimono. So she showed me to my room, a lovely room. It was a low three-piece suite, two rush mats and a cushion. So she said, you pay me week in advance. She said to me, would you like geisha now? So I said, well, I said, if you've got the kettle on, I said.
Frankie Howard, of course, unmistakably. The sea is the source of many pleasures, and one of the greatest, according to this poem by Justin Richardson, is just floating on it.
Floating. Personal floating, not boating. Whether we do it well or our legs will sink, is the nearest we get to the downy heavenly brink, to the featherbed seraph reclining. The water is warm and blue and the sun is shining, and we see the white bowl of the sky iridescent because some salt water has got in our eye. Volitionless, daydreaming, drifting, gently falling, and better still, lifting our mind and our body at once in a state of suspension. We're back in the crib, but uncabined and unconfined. So beatific a state of mind that we always relax our attention and more or less doze, then water gets up our nose.
Another maritime attraction is, of course, boating. In some social circles, it's a great status symbol to have the right sort of vessel and all the right sort of accessories.
Well, Mama, Papa, how do you like my new yacht? Cost me $84,000 with the twin diesel engines, top speed, 35 knots. And here we are, out on the open seas, with the sea and the sun and the wind in our hair. It's a little different than the Bronx, huh, Mama, Papa?
Yeah.
That's right.
And look at this uniform I'm wearing. Custom-made from Abercrombie & Fitch. How about it, Papa? Your son is a regular captain, huh?
Listen, Sonny, I don't have to tell you. By Mama, you're a captain. By me, you're a captain. And by you, you're a captain. But by a captain, you're no captain.
From the LP, you don't have to be Jewish. One of the hazards of ocean travel is seasickness. And even if you survive that, you may find other things to upset you. Here's a chauvinist entry from the 1664 diary of Edward Brown.
I was not sick at all in coming over from Dover to Calais upon the sea, but yet could hardly forbear spewing at the first sight of the French women. They are most of them such a tawny, sappy, base complexion, and have such ugly faces.
There have always been a great many supposedly infallible cures for seasickness. Some sound more attractive than others. Here's one recommended in the 1886 guidebook, General Hints to Emigrants.
A little bit of camphor chewed once a day will frequently act as a palliative, if not as a preventative. In this way also a drop or two of chloroform, or better still, chloric ether. Or of creosote on a lump of sugar will be useful.
Tastes like a fence, doesn't it? Here's a much more appealing solution offered by Edmund Howell in his 1878 book, The European in India.
For seasickness, there is no general specific, though some remedies are occasionally found very efficacious. Champagne, Moselle, or sparkling hock are often found to have an excellent effect in settling the stomach.
Here, here. Seasickness threatens even hardened sailors. Here, with apologies to some famous nautical lines by John Masefield, is Arthur Gitterman's poem, Sea Chill.
I must down to the seas again, where the billows romp and reel. So all I ask is a large ship that rides on an even keel. and a mild breeze and a broad deck with a slight list to leeward, and a clean chair in a snug nook, and a nice, kind steward. I must down to the sea again, the sport of wind and tide, as the grey wave and the green wave play leapfrog over the side. And all I want is a glassy calm with a bone-dry scupper, a good book and a warm rug, and a light, plain supper. I must down to the seas again, though there I'm a total loss, and can't say which is worse, the pitch, the plunge, the roll, the toss. But all I ask is a safe retreat in a bar well tended, and a soft berth and a smooth course till the long trip's ended.
Oh.
What one probably wouldn't ask for on any ocean journey is one of those interminable sea shanties.
I hear the seabirds cry, me boys. I hear the seabirds cry. I hear the thunder crashing out of a stormy sky. There's rain and hail and a tattered sail with a brave nor'eastern blow. Oh, I've been ashore too long, me boy. It's time for me to go. Time for me to go. There's many a shipmate lost, me boy. Many a shipmate lost. Stout-hearted lads from Devon, and who's to count the cost? But take me far, where the big ships are, and the waters ebb and flow. Oh, I've been ashore too long, my boy. It's time for me to go. Time for me to go.
Man overboard! And it's me! Oh.
Bernard Cribbins. Yes, the sea is full of strange creatures, and fewer stranger than the one which was once defined thus in a schoolboy's essay.
An octopus is a person who hopes for the best.
Here's a poem from Ogden Nash on the subject of the porpoise.
I kind of like the playful porpoise, a healthy mind and a healthy corpus. He and his cousin, the playful dolphin, why, they like swimming like I like golfing.
Porpoises do get around a bit, according to this report from the Times.
A Phocina phocina was found today propped up in one of the cubicles of the men's lavatory in Glasgow Central Station. The staff thought it was a dolphin, but the 4-foot, 64-pound carcass was identified as a porpoise by the museum's department at Kelvin Grove Park. How it had come into the lavatory, nobody knew. One gentleman said, "We had heavy rain, there was flooding, but this is ridiculous."
Other strange denizens of the deep are human submarines and human torpedoes.
Stand by, torpedo tubes.
I think we're going to have to submerge, Commander.
Why? Why? Because we're being attacked, clown, that's why. Oh, gee. You strike me. Okay, let's go then. All right, now we'll just wait. Men, we're in a difficult spot. There are about 2 battle wagons, 3 aircraft carriers, gosh knows how many planes. It's not easy, men, but we've been through these things before, right?
Well, I don't know, buddy. Boy, sitting in these things is too much. They're just gonna pound the living out of us. How about it, Jake?
I don't know.
I've been through a couple of these things, Gee. It's hard to tell.
I sure like to get out of here, man, if I could.
Don't be afraid, man. We'll get through this. I'm not kidding. We'll get through it. Right, Chief?
You bet, buddy, we're gonna get through it. I got 35 years in the Scrabble Navy, man, and I ain't gonna die now.
That's the spirit I like, men. You there. We have to fire one torpedo.
Listen. I'm not going to get in that tube.
That's an order.
But we were such friends. Commander, I...
In the tube.
This is ridiculous. Human torpedo. Okay.
Stand by. Fire! Good heavens, he's turning around and coming back.
I'm sorry, gang, but my propeller will spin.
Jonathan Winters. One of the creatures of the sea which gives rise to many images is the oyster. Ambrose Bierce didn't show much enthusiasm for this particular delicacy when he defined it in his Devil's Dictionary.
Oyster, a slimy, gobby shellfish which civilization gives man the hardihood to eat without removing the entrails. The shells are sometimes given to the poor.
The oyster offers great opportunities for phrase makers. Here's a nice image by Barton Holiday.
A man may as well open an oyster without a knife as a lawyer's mouth without a fee.
Here's another from Saki.
There is nothing in Christianity or Buddhism that quite matches the sympathetic unselfishness of the oyster.
And here's an anonymous definition.
An optimist is a man with no money who goes into a restaurant and orders oysters hoping that he'll find a pearl in one to pay for the meal.
We've all felt that at one time or other. Now, I think, could be the moment for a little nostalgia. Here, to bring it all back, is the Crazy Gang at Sea.
All aboard!
All right, come on, boys. Up the gangway.
Wait a minute.
Shut up, shoving Cecil.
It's not me, Noxy, it's him.
Here, what's the name of the ship, Goldie?
Called the Grace Darling, after that wonderful heroine, Grace Darling.
I've never heard of her.
Why, Grace Darling went out one night alone and brought back 20 men.
20 men?
Yes.
Does Mae West know about this?
Yeah. Mae West, you're always thinking about birds. Now, come on, we must have discipline.
What's discipline?
You know what discipline is, Jimmy. The thing that keeps the men of Britain together.
Oh.
Yes. Now, Jimmy, get over by the ship stays.
The what?
The ship stays. You know what stays are.
Yeah, the thing that keeps the women of Britain together.
Now, come on, boys. I'll show you around the ship. Now, here we are. This is the library.
Boys, here's a lovely book. Her Sweethearts. Chap 1, Chap 2, Chap 3,
All right.
Oh, here's a lovely book. Look, the Jewish Cathedral.
Jewish Cathedral?
Yeah, Westminster's Abbey.
Westminster Abbey. You don't talk sloppy.
Boys, here's a book about the sea. Jimmy, what would you do in case of a storm?
I'd throw out an anchor.
Yeah. Supposing you were at the other end of the ship.
I'd throw out another anchor.
Yes, but wait a minute. Suppose you were on the port side.
I'd throw out another anchor.
Wait a minute. Where are you getting all these anchors?
Wait a minute. Where are you getting all the storms?
There's the whistle for boat drill. Grab your lifebelts, boys.
What are the lifebelts?
Those round things.
Cool. I thought they were coits.
Coits. I got a coit with two pair of trousers.
That's a coat. You don't know how to talk sloppy.
Now, come on. Let's get on deck and try them on.
Hi, Jimmy Nerva, have I got this life belt on right? I can't get me braces over it.
You don't put your braces over it, you wear it down the seat of your pants.
What for?
To keep your end up.
You know, that's some sense.
What on earth are you doing with that penknife, Charlie?
I'm just making a hole in my life belt for my collar stud.
Oh. Here, I don't like the look of the weather, Cecil. Did you notice a spot of rain?
That wasn't a spot of rain, a seagull flew by.
Cool, shut up, Cecil.
Oh, you shut up, Cecil. Oh. Ship's beginning to roll a bit, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I wonder why the sea gets angry.
Because it's been crossed so often.
The Crazy Gang. One must never underestimate the power and danger of the sea. It can be cruel indeed. With that sobering thought in mind, let's hear one of Thomas Hood's pathetic ballads. Here is Mr. Alfred Marx with The Supper Superstition.
'Twas 12 o'clock by Chelsea chimes when all in hungry trim could Mr. Jupp set down to sup with wife and Kate and Jim. Said he, "Upon this dainty card, how bravely I shall sup," when, whiter than the tablecloth, a ghost came rising up. "Oh, father dear, oh, mother dear, dear Kate and brother Jim, you know when someone went to sea, don't cry, but I am him. You hope someday with fond embrace to greet your absent Jack. But oh, I am come here to say I'm never coming back. But oh, my spirit cannot rest in Davy Jones's sod till I've appeared to you and said, don't sup on that ere cod. You live on land and little think what passes in the sea. Last Sunday week at 2 p.m., that cod was picking me. Those oysters, too, that look so plump and seem so nicely done, they put my corpse in many shells instead of only one. Oh, do not eat those oysters, then, and do not touch the shrimps. When I was in me briny grave, they sucked my blood like imps. Don't eat what brutes would never eat, the brutes I used to pat. They'll know the smell they used to smell. Just try the dog and cat. The spirit fled. They wept his fate and cried, alack, alack. At last, up started Brother Jim. Let's try if Jack was Jack. They called the dog, they called the cat, and little kitten too. And down they put the cod and sauce to see what brutes would do. Old Tray licked all the oysters up. Puss never stood at crimps, but munched the cod and little kit, quite feasted on the shrimps. The thing was odd, and minus cod and sauce, they stood like posts. Oh, prudent folks, for fear of hoax, put no belief in ghosts.
Now, for that whiff of the 19th century, let's come right up to date and go over to the captain addressing the crew of his nuclear submarine about to surface after 2 years under the sea.
Men, I know you're all anxious to be reunited with your loved ones. In some cases, your wives. But we have a few moments before we surface, and I've just jotted down some things that I think are kind of important. I wouldn't take the time if I didn't. First of all, I think we ought to give the cooks a standing ovation for the wonderful job they've done. So if you men want to stand now, and let's really hear it for the cooks. I don't think you men realize the difficult problem it is aboard a submarine to... You men want to stand now for the cooks? Come on now, men, let bygones be bygones and hear it for the cooks, huh? Look, man, I'm not going to surface until I hear it for the cooks. All right, that's a little better. Today, as we add another glorious page to the history of the USS Codfish, I think it's important that we reflect on some of the past glories of the Codfish. I don't know how many of you men know this, but the Codfish holds a record for the most Japanese tonnage sunk. Being comprised of five freighters and 15 aircraft carriers. A truly enviable record. Unfortunately, they were sunk in 1954. However, it stands as the largest peacetime tonnage ever sunk. Our voyage has received a lot of coverage in the newspaper, and I'd like to present our side of it. I think our firing on Miami Beach can best be termed ill-timed. It happened on what they call in the newspaper business a slow news day, and as a result received a lot more space than I think it deserved, since it was the off-season down there. Man, I think you'll agree, I've been pretty lax as far as discipline is concerned, and golly, nobody enjoys a joke more than I do. But I would like the executive officer returned. Now, we've looked in the torpedo tubes, we've looked in your bags, and... I mean, it's been over 2 weeks, man, and we're just damn lucky that it wasn't the navigational officer or someone real important like that. Looking back on the mutiny, I think a lot of the trouble stemmed from the fact that you men weren't coming to me with your problems. As I told you, the door to my office is always open. I think you know why it's always open. That was stolen. I'd like that. It looks like the work of the same man. But since we started the cruise on such a low note, I think it's important that we try to end it on a high note. And to me, there is nothing more impressive in the Navy as a submarine breaks water to see a bunch of sailors in their dress blues as they come rushing up out of the that hole there. And come to a parade rest. This to me is one of the I've just been notified that we'll be surfacing in just a moment, and you might be happy to know that you'll be gazing on the familiar skyline of either New York City or Buenos Aires. Is that I can't dismiss me. That's all.
Bob Newhart. And let's conclude our investigation of the sea with an anonymous limerick.
A daring young lady of Guam observed the Pacific so calm, I'll swim out for a lark. She met a large shark. Let us now sing the 90th Psalm.
Well, this is the last program in the present series, so until we meet again, from Alfred and me...
Goodbye.
I'll be BBCing you, Colonel.
Frank Muir goes into The Sea. It was written by Simon Brett and produced by Richard Edis.